listening to the Hall of Fame. Here's Booker T and Brad Gilmore.
Welcome inside the Hall of Fame. I'm Booker T, six-time world champion, two-time Hall of Famer. Got my man Brad Gilmore here with me, as always, guys, coming to you from ESPN 975-925. And first, before we even get started, man, I just want to say my heart and prayers go out to superstar Billy Graham. Passed away, I tell you, man, superstar Billy Graham, what a hell of a career. I remember being a young kid here in Houston, Texas. And when superstar Billy Graham came to town, man, it was like, it was Ric Flair before Ric Flair. It really was. When you say that, that's the boy there. That was the boy before Ric Flair. And I must say, the matches that he had back in the day with Super Sock Jose Lothario from San Antonio, Texas, man, those matches were some of the best matches and probably one of the best rivalries here in Texas that we've ever seen. So just want to say Godspeed to the superstar.
So superstar was before my time, obviously. But I remember when I first, because he went in the Hall of Fame in 04. And I remember when he went in the Hall of Fame, seeing his promos then. That was like around WrestleMania 20. And going, oh, this is where Jesse Ventura got it. This is where Hulk Hogan got it. This is where such and such got their inspiration from. The superstar Billy Graham. And then I went back and you see the legendary bull rope match he had with Dusty Rhodes at Madison Square Garden for the WWF Championship. He's the one who ended the reign of Bruno Sammartino. And he had one of the sweetest lines. I eat T-bone steaks. I lift barbell plates, but I'm sweeter than a German chocolate cake. You know, the superstar, Billy Graham. And
The man with the power. Too sweet to be sour.
That was actually Dusty
stole that, I think.
Superstar. I don't know where Superstar got it, but I remember that one, man. And I remember, too, when I remember in 04 when he went in the Hall of Fame, I remember telling my grandmother, hey, have you ever heard of superstar Billy Graham? And she goes, Billy Graham, the preacher? You know, because that was like the legendary preacher's name, Billy Graham. But superstar, man. Rest in peace to him. 79, I believe. Was diagnosed with a condition, I believe, and passed a couple of nights or last night during the AEW show. I saw the news. He's the guy who beat Bruno for the title, if memory serves me correct, and kind of ended the reign of Bruno Sammartino, and then we went into all the other champions after that. But you know, really big deal, huge. Yeah. There wouldn't be a WWF without him.
Yeah, it would.
I mean, to the level, because you know, Bruno, they needed somebody after Bruno.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
they had Backlund. Billy Graham was a guy who could talk people into the building. People want to see Bruno because he was countryman. Right, we popped in there for that. Billy Graham could talk people in the building.
Yeah, definitely, man. Jesse Ventura just stole his whole character. You know?
He's like, "What? Oh, I'm stealing all of that."
The pants, the
shirt,
everything, the beard, everything,
the hair.
Literally stole everything.
He took it all.
Stop, Billy Graham. Say, I'm gonna just take it to another level, man. But hell of a career, man. Hell of a career, superstar.
Yeah, superstar Billy Graham, man. You know what? Speaking of a hell of a career, I wanted to start the show off a little fun today because Twitter is not a great place most days.
But
sometimes they send you something and you go, oh, man, that's pretty sweet. You know, a few years ago, it was your 1-800-COLLECT commercial, you know, when you were the boxer. I'd never seen it before. And then they send it over. I'm like, oh, look at this, Twitter, the magic of Twitter. Well, I saw something that somebody sent me of a young Booker T. And I thought I'd like for you to live react to it. It's part of your wrestling career. So I feel like it's in bounds for you to see. And I don't know when the last time you saw this is. You mind if I play it for you?
I don't mind at all.
Okay, so this is a throwback clip of a young G.I. bro. Here we go.
Inside the Hall of Fame. Here's Booker T and Brad Gilmore.
Out. When you come to the WWE, this is what you're going to have to face right here. It's the G.I. Bro.
Well, let me tell you something, Steve, baby. I've been noticing all these big guys like the Super Collider, the Warrior, this Thor. Well, let me... First come, first things first, man. I got a new haircut. Would you like to see it, man?
Yeah, I want to see it. All right.
G.I. Bro. G.I. Bro is my name. And beating people up is my game. Look in my eyes. Everybody in the WWE, I just want you to know one thing. The G.I. Bro is ready, willing, and able to take on all comers in the WWE. That means everybody. Thor, Cherokee Warrior, Super Collider, mainly because I seen what you did. You came out, you tore the sign up, you ripped it out of my little private's hand. You stripped it in two, man. That's something you don't do. You don't mess with my little private's, man. It's a war. Let me tell you, when I get you in the square circle, when I get you in the comeback zone, when I get you in the ganking zone, that's when I'm going to declare World War III on you and take you clean out of the team, man.
That is one of the greatest promos in the history of professional wrestling.
Oh, my God, man.
How old were you then?
25.
So this is year one. This is year one.
That was right fresh out of the wrestling school, man. Literally, we had a wrestling school. We was at wrestling school for 2 months. And after that, we were on television. That was it. We were wrestling in the Sam Houston Coliseum, man. And I tell you, man, what a beginning, man. It reminds me of the Rocket right there, man. It looked just like the Rocket right there when I look at when I saw it. I'm like, wait a minute, it looked just like Josiah, man. But I swear, man.
You know what's interesting about that? Like, if I'm looking at it, knowing that's like one of your first televised promos is like, I don't know. And I'm not even trying to big you up too much, but it's just like you took to this so much, so easy. Like that for that to be like your first year of wrestling promo, that's like leaps and bounds ahead of people who are on television today doing promos. Bro, and even to think about calling them your little, like my private, I saw you took it out of my private's hand and I'm ready, willing, and able, and I'm going to get you in the combat zone, you Super Collider. You know, I'm like, this is crazy.
Bro, I stole everything from Hogan back then, man.
It's that great.
That was a Hogan riff right there, if I ever saw one. But I always say when I got in the wrestling business, man, it was like deja vu. It seemed like I had been here before, you know, and I picked it up so easy. Cutting a promo for me, that was literally a first promo. Nobody told me what to say. I just picked up and ran with it. The G.I. Bro character. I stopped being G.I. Bro because I had a big scar on my back, and I thought the Army character would play into, you know, me catching some shrapnel, you know what I mean, back in Grenada. You know what I'm saying? I was just making up stuff, and it worked, man. I swear, when I first was doing that character right there, I know we got to take a break in about a minute, but we used to go to these high schools, and man, I knew I had something magical. I knew it was just the beginning of something special. I didn't know how far it was going to go. I didn't know it was going to last 30 plus years or anything like that. But I used to come out, and those kids, man, you could see the stands, man. They would literally come out of the stands, and they would mob me, and they would literally be like my little privates hanging out on me on my way to the ring. And it was a magical moment. I remember doing a show in Galveston, Texas, and I remember we didn't have a whole lot of people, maybe a couple of hundred people at the show, and Ivan Putski, he came up to me and he goes, bro, where are your people at, man? And I'm like, wait a minute, I'm just a green kid. You talking about where all my people at? And then I can't remember who it was in the ring they were wrestling, but the fans just started chanting all in unison, we want bro, we want bro, we want bro. And I looked at Ivan Putski and I go, you asked for what my people were? There they go.
And then you hit him with one of these.
We got to take a break, guys. Stick around. You're in the Hall of Fame. We'll be back in a minute.
I am the Rocket Josiah John. I'm training at Reality of Wrestling. I've wanted to be a wrestler since I was a little kid, since watching it with my dad for the first time and seeing guys like Booker T wrestle. That's what I knew. That's what I wanted to do. So I just had to take that leap, take that drive, and chase some dreams. The greatest thing about Reality Wrestling is all the knowledge that's here. From all the trainers, Brian Davison, Brian Keith, I am the Rocket. One day, Booker T just called me Rocket.
And I got to give him a cool name, man. Rocket is just something that stuck out with me. And I think that's something that's going to stick with him for a long time. He had Rocket on his shirt. I don't know if you noticed that, but he's definitely falling into it, man. And he's really buying into what this thing really, truly is. And if he could just keep his mind on point and stay focused, he definitely could do something in his business.
Like, I've been doing really well training here, just coming as much as I can, come early to work out before the actual training. We have like a whole gym for people to work out. What would I say to somebody that's on the fence about joining Reality Wrestling? I would just tell you, just take the leap, because everybody here is going to take care of you and help you get to where you need to be. You can make it here, you can make it anywhere.
Welcome back inside the Hall of Fame, guys. I'm still crying from that young Booker T clip right there.
When was the last time you saw that? Since you did it?
Yeah, it might have been since I did it, man. I haven't seen that. I never go back and look at old stuff like that or anything, but it definitely brought back some old memories. And our time flies. I still look the same, though. I don't think I've changed too much other than the beard, but I still look like myself.
It definitely looks like you. It reminds me a lot of your son, to be honest with you, when I see Kendrick and you. The other thing, though, that
my voice was definitely not matured quite yet.
It wasn't matured, and you even had like a little bit of a little something extra on it, you know. I don't even know, I can't even describe it, but it was just like, that was the one thing that stood out. I was like, it sounds like Booker, but it doesn't sound like Booker, you know.
Yeah
what we know you as.
Hey man, you know, that was me.
What was that?
I think I saw Hogan do that one time.
Like, let me just try it. Let me go.
I'm serious. I think I saw Hogan do that one time. You know, in one of his promos. It wasn't that, but it went off the camera. You know, so I was like, let me pull a Hogan here. You know.
Others loved it. Now, who carved G.I. Bro in the back of your head? Who did that? Do you remember? Did you have a barber back in the day?
A spot over there in South Park, right there on MLK. I can't remember the name of the spot, man. It's been that long since I got a haircut, but brother had a little shop over there I used to go to all the time. It was like my little personal little barber shop I used to go to and hang out with the boys, you know, talk shop every now and then. You know, then getting into wrestling business, I was kind of like, you know, like a local celebrity too at the same time. So it's actually really cool, you know, doing some stupid stuff like that. It's crazy.
Now, you said you were fresh out of wrestling school, right on television. This was the WWA. This was
Western Wrestling Alliance. Yes.
And was this the famous one where the money was gone, or was that the GWF?
No, that was Global. Global was where we was told the money was gone, which really was no money that ever anyway, I don't think. You know what I mean? Not for guys like myself. You know, the payoff for a green kid is, you know, going to be minimal anywhere you go when you start out. So I wasn't really looking for a whole lot of money, but no, that was the Global Wrestling Federation where Tiger Conway said, you know, if you're thinking about going to Global, I just want to let you know, the money is gone. So y'all might as well stay right here where there ain't no money.
One of the best lines in the world. But like, what do they do to, like, I guess for the WWA to be on television, did they do anything to like prepare you? Like, hey, okay, G.I. Bro, you're going to go in and, well, we want this promo. It's got to be 60 seconds. There's going to be a guy on the other side of the camera who's going to give you a cue. Was there anything like that, or was it just all feel?
You got a promo, you know, who you're going to be, you know, perhaps working. It was just a general promo. If you notice, I didn't have any specific person I was calling out.
Super Collider was your brother, right?
Yeah, Super Collider was my brother. Cherokee, right. Warrior, and Thor. Those are like three of the main guys in the company. So, you know, cutting a promo, like Dusty say, you want to make sure you talk about the guys, you want to talk about the town, you want to talk about the arena, stuff like that. So I knew all of those, the framework of cutting a promo. I wouldn't, you know, as confident, you know, as I was in later years, but you could tell I was on to something. I had the beginnings of what a promo should be like.
Yeah. Yeah, and like it's like a, like as far as first promos go, I was really, that's what the tweet was. Someone was like, as far as early promos go, you could tell Booker T was a natural. And when you look at it, you're like, oh wow, yeah, it's like not a bad promo, even by today's standards. Like, if somebody cut that on television, you go, man, that guy's got a lot of energy.
You know,
a lot of charisma.
I say, man, it's when I watch it back, man, I just see a kid that was just happy to be in the business doing something. I mean, look at me, man. I mean, look at me. I got an Army outfit, you know what I mean? I got a whole rack of bullets on that I went to the Army surplus store. I went to the Army surplus store and got all that stuff. I even had a hand grenade around my neck at one point. You know, I'm serious. I came out with a hand grenade. You know,
hilarious. So,
no, I'm serious. I still got one of the jackets G.I. Bro wore, a little vest. Downstairs, you know, so that character, man, has definitely fueled me to do something special in this business, man. I love that character. And then to be able to bring it to big screen as far as WCW, you know, which, you know, my trainer, Ivan Putski, he's the one who actually said, hey, you G.I. Bro, you know. I came in with a hat, Army hat on that I had found at this warehouse that I was working at. And I cleaned it up and, you know, put it on. I went to wrestling school and Ivan, he saw me with the hat on. And he goes, you know what? That's who you are, G.I. Bro. And I was like, G.I. Bro? He was like, yeah, G.I. Bro. And I was like, all right, you know, and that's how I started. Seriously, something similar to that.
Well, yeah, because back in the day, too, this is 1990, people didn't really have just first name, last name. You had to be something, you know, like the Ultimate Warrior, Hulk Hogan, Macho Man. Ooh, yeah.
Look, for me, I thought it was it could work because Desert Storm was going on.
Right. This is
for me. I thought it was going to work because Sergeant Slaughter was, you know, coming to the end of his run. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm going to be the one to step in Sergeant Slaughter's spot. That's what my whole plan was. That was the master plan. Was to step into Sergeant Slaughter's spot in the WWF and take it to another level. That was the plan.
Wow, man. It'd be interesting if that's the path that you ended up going down. That's so crazy. When did you drop? Did you drop G.I. Bro when you got to Global?
Yeah.
Global, right?
Yeah. My brother and I, when we went to Global, hot stuff, Eddie Gilbert, he actually wanted to bring us in and make us this cool tag team and, you know, put suits on us and, you know, make us, you know, it was just out of the box. Two brothers winning the championships. He had this whole plan for us. But when we went down there, it was my brother going to get a tryout. And I was just tagging along with my brother. And, you know, Hot Stuff said, well, you know, who's this guy? He goes, well, that's my brother. And he goes, your worker? Yeah, your worker. You know, you guys ever tagged before? Yeah, we've tagged before. You know, we never tagged before at that time. So he's like, well, I'm looking for a tag team, you know. And, great, you know what I mean? Here we are, you know. And he goes, well, what's your name? You know, well, I'm Booker T, you know. He's like, man, that's a great name, you know, Booker T. You know, and my brother's name, you know, at that time, you know, he wasn't Stevie Ray.
Right.
And he goes, well, you got to think of something cool for you. What about Stevie Ray? Like, you know, I mean, Stevie Ray Vaughan, you know, like Stevie Ray. And I was like, wow, Booker T and Stevie Ray, it sounds great.
It sounds really good.
But Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert is the one who put that whole thing together.
Where the hell does Super Collider come from?
I don't even know if he was born yet, Brad, but it was, you know, do your history. It was an Atom Smasher.
I know what a collider is, so that's what he did it after?
I'm just letting you know where it comes from. You ask me, I'm telling you. Okay.
Enlighten me.
I'm going to enlighten you. Back in the day, they were building an Atom Smasher in Waxahachie, Texas, and it was called the Super Collider. It never happened. It never went off. But that's where my brother got the name from, which I thought it was a really, really cool name. An Atom Smasher, the Super Collider. Oh, man. It had a lot of good feel behind it, I think. Never worked out too good.
It never got there. Never got there. G.I., but we saw G.I. Bro later, Super Collider, but it's cool. How long were you in WWA?
That company lasted for about maybe a year and a half. Maybe, I don't think it lasted 2 years because we had a nice plus school out in Southwest Houston and beautiful, beautiful school. I mean, in a high rent district. And then, I don't know, the rent stopped getting paid. And then,
It was that high rep.
But anyway, I mean, Ivan, he had a nice car. You know, all the family, everybody had nice cars. They was making some money. The investors who bought in on that thing, I think that's what it was. A lot of investors that bought in on it, and they just mismanaged a lot of the money. But we moved from there to like in the hood, where, you know, if it rained, we'll get a little bit of rain in, you know, rats running around and whatnot. And then after that, it pretty much folded. And then I went to this place called Texas All Pro Wrestling here in Houston. And I worked there. It was actually, I had some great times at Texas All Pro because I got a chance to learn from Tugboat Taylor. He was one of the guys, Tiger Conway Jr. Another one of the guys who I really got a chance to, you know, sit under the learning tree and from a perspective. I got a chance to wrestle Killer Tim Brooks. First real match I ever had. And I think I learned so much in that one outing with Killer Tim Brooks than I had learned that whole time that I had been in wrestling. That one night with Killer Tim Brooks taught me everything I needed to know about this business, you know. So I moving through those channels, I learned a lot. I didn't work a whole lot of independent shows, only here in Texas, only here in Houston, actually at the Unicorn Ballroom every Sunday at the Unicorn Ballroom. And what a great time I've had at the Unicorn Ballroom. The one night, I know we got to take a break. I think I left the Unicorn Ballroom after the night with Killer Tim Brooks because I thought I was going to get a payoff. And brother came to me and he gave me like $20, $30 or something like that. And I was so bad, I threw the money back in his face and I walked out. And was the last time I ever worked for Texas All Pro. But we got to take a break, guys. Stick around. You're sitting in the Hall of Fame. We'll be back in a minute.
You dig it? Sucker!
You are listening to the Hall of Fame. Here's Booker T and Brad Gilmore.
Words out. When you come to the WWA, this is what you're going to have to face right here. It's the G.I. Bro.
Well, let me tell you something, Steve, baby. I've been noticing all these big guys like the Super Collider, the Warrior, this Thor. Well, let me... First come, first things first, man. I got a new haircut. Would you like to see it, man?
Yeah, I want to see it. All right.
G.I. Bro. G.I. Bro is my name. And beating people up is my game. Look in my eyes. Everybody in the WWA, I just want you to know one thing. The G.I. Bro is ready, willing, and able to take on all comers in the WWA. That means everybody. Thor, Cherokee Warrior, Super Collider mainly, because I seen what you did. You came out, you tore the sign up, you ripped it out of my little private's hand, you stripped it in two, man. That's something you don't do. You don't mess with my little private's, man. It's a war. Let me tell you, when I get you in the square circle, when I get you in the combat zone, when I get you in the ganking zone, that's when I'm going to declare World War III on you and take you clean out of the game, man. Ah!
Welcome back. It's at the Hall of
Fame. I had to see it one more time.
Hey, man. It wasn't that bad of a promo.
It's not that bad.
When I look at it, I'm like, wait a minute, it's not that bad. You know, no, man, I had a knack, man. When I get you in the ganking zone, you hear that?
I didn't know what that means.
When you get in the when you get in the ganking zone, dog, you are in trouble.
Oh, the ganking zone, man.
Oh, the ganking zone. Just making up stuff. I'm still doing the same thing this many years later.
It did actually pop me too when you say you don't put your hands on my little privates.
Little privates.
The ganking zone, ladies and gentlemen.
I don't even know I got that stuff. You think somebody can write that?
No. And nobody's writing. Oh, thank you, whoever sent that to me on Twitter. Shout out to you. That was awesome. Now, we do have a couple super chats to get to, Book. There's been a lot of stuff going on in the world. Lex Rivers says, don't get ganked. James Weston says, about to get ganked. Dale Sutton says, hashtag ganking zone.
Man, it's crazy, man. It's going to be a new one, man. The ganking zone, man. Oh, my God.
I got to hear a ganking zone reference on NXT.
Yeah, I got to get one.
Oh, she's got her in the ganking zone.
Oh, my God, man.
We're having too much fun.
That's so stupid, man.
Oh, man, the ganking zone. Do you have anything that's on your mind before we get to?
Oh, man, let's get to it.
Any
man.
Of the super chats? Okay, cool. Let's do it. We'll move over to the super chats. We'll go to Marcus Craig first.
Super chat.
Marcus Craig says, Book and Brad, I think Cora Jade is going to win this NXT Women's Championship tournament, but I really like Lyra Valkyrie. What do you all think of her?
Valkyria definitely is.
Valkyria.
Yeah. Valkyria is definitely, you know, she's special. I mean, she's definitely got a passion for the business, a zeal for, you know, what she's doing out there as well. You could just, it radiates off of her. Cora Jade, man, like I say, she's young. She's next level. She's going to be a star one day. She's going to be a big, mm-hmm. big star. I really, really see that in Cora, as well as you can't. I'm going to tell you right now, if you're thinking about sleeping on Tiffany Stratton, you better wake up. I'm serious, man, because she's got the full package, bro. She's got the full package. I mean, she's got the face. She's got the body. She's got the in-ring talent, in-ring prowess. She actually knows her weak points as well. That right there is what makes her smart. So, Tiffany, you better not look past her, as well as Roxanne Perez. So we got players, man. We got players still left in this tournament. So I'm not going to pick one, but Cora Jade definitely. I feel like it's her time. I really do.
Look, I think Cora Jade is a great option. I think she'd be a great champion. I think Tiffany Stratton. I think she's been right there, man. That's who I'd put the title on. I feel like you could really get a long run out of that one, or Cora, either one. I think. As far as the NXT women's division goes, man, it's really, man, it's ganking out there. You know what I mean? Like, we got a lot of we got a lot of options, which is a great problem to have.
Yeah.
If you come up with more than three people who could be the world champion in your promotion, you're doing a great job of building stars. And I think that this is the best the NXT women's division has been in probably 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, even JC Jane, she's not in it, but
yeah,
she's definitely high up there as well. And, you know, Fallon Henley, man, she brings it. I tell you, man, NXT women division, I said they could lose a couple in the women's division and in the tag team division. That's what I said, just because they were pretty strong in both of those categories, and to be able to rebuild new talent to get those guys ready for if they're going to go up to the main roster and compete. You know, I think that's something that's necessary as well. So I like it, man. I like where we're going right now with NXT.
Jason Marone wants to chime in on this, and he says, Kiana is the hottest biscottiest, though.
Kiana Jane, the hottest biscotti, baby. Give me a cup.
She on the list.
Give me a cup. Give me a cup. Give me a cup of biscotti. Yeah, most definitely. Now, she definitely high on the list.
Give me a cup. Ridiculous. What, oh my gosh, that's so funny.
You don't want a cup of biscotti, man?
Oh, I mean, look. You gotta give me one of those frequent customer cards and you'll punch the ticket.
A cup of biscotti, man.
Put her on the list, someone said. Oh my gosh, this show's off the rails today, but it's hilarious. I'm so crying, man. Shoot. Ooh, we got another one here from James Weston said, make it a double.
I'm gonna have to use that one right there too. I'm serious.
Make it a double.
Oh my God.
Okay, we got to get back. This is our next one. This is from Bernard Frederick, who said, Booker's writing that down right now.
Yeah, I am writing that down. I'm down the whole thing. Cup of biscotti early and then later, make it a double. You know what I mean? I like that. I'm going to make sure I use that somewhere.
And ganking zone, too.
Oh, my God.
Hey, Book, on a serious note, has there been a wrestler that you were close to that passed away unexpectedly? Well, yeah, there's been several, you know, unfortunately.
Yeah, there's been a lot. The business is hard.
Yeah.
It's hard. It really is. It's the hardest part of the business is having to go through that, you know, time after time after time. And the one thing about life, it never stops. So it's going to continue to happen. It's just, you know, just trying to deal with it.
Yeah. with Superstar, who just passed, like I said, I think he had a condition. If I read correctly, he had some condition that made him, because 79 is really not that old anymore.
Well, I mean, just to be honest, Superstar Billy Graham, I mean, he wasn't shy about talking about
it. He wasn't the best to his body. No,
he wasn't shy about, you know, steroid use and stuff and whatnot.
Yeah.
Back then, those guys were, you know, pushing it hard too, man. I mean, there was no rules, no regulations back then on anything. And it was the Wild Wild West. And he was one of the first guys that I ever seen that had that jacked up physique, like a bodybuilder inside the wrestling ring. And, you know, you run hard, you play hard, and sometimes at the end of the day, you pay for it. And that's just the bottom line to it. You know, Ric Flair, he said it many, many times. He felt like he should have been dead many, many years ago. Just because he ran hard, he played hard, and that's just normally part of the consequences to that part of life. You know what I mean? So, but like I say, man, it's just something that continues to happen. We just have to be strong, especially as men. As men, we got to be strong. Weakness is something that we all of us have. You know, at certain times, you know. But when we're going through something like this, especially for our family, our kids. You know, those are the times, men, step up and they bite down on their mouthpiece and they do what they got to do.
You know, about the steroid use, it was really one of the things that stood out to me. I told you recently, I saw that new Ultimate Warrior documentary they did on A&E, and the physique he had was insane. I mean, it was insane. And the bodybuilder guy who I guess recruited him said, oh yeah, if you open my refrigerator, it was nothing but steroids. Like there was no food. It was just steroids. And man, like when you looked at the Warrior, he had muscles on top of muscles on top of muscles.
Yeah.
And, and it's just insane. And I know at the time, like there was a time in the 80s or 90s or something, or in the 80s where steroids weren't illegal. Like you could just get them in the pharmacy. You could go get steroids. And, it's kind of wild to think just a few years later, like Vince is on trial for it. Hogan, like, and Hogan hasn't been shy about it either. Hogan said, yeah, he used the gas. He was on steroids. And if you see Hogan when he was using them, you know, and then like the next year, he almost looks like a different person.
Yeah. I mean, those guys, you know, yeah, it's one thing using steroids it with anything, abusing it.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's when.
Great point.
Yeah. That's when the things really get out of whack when you totally, metamorphosize, you know, and for me, I've been pretty much the same weight throughout my whole wrestling career. And what's crazy is I'm still the same weight right now. I swear to God, I'm still the same weight, 225 pounds, 230. On television, I used to say I was 258 pounds. But I never was 258 pounds. The biggest I ever got was like 240. And that was just way too much weight for me. So I realized my bones wasn't able to carry a lot of weight as well as look good in the ring. So I just say, I'm going to just work with what God gave me and not push myself to that extreme limit. Because as well as anything, you know, that's good for you, it's at the end of the day, it's normally bad for you. Mm-hmm. I don't care what it is. You know what I mean? Normally, if it's good, you go, wait a minute, this is too good. I better take a step back. I'm serious.
Yeah.
I remember, I know we got to take a break, but I remember one time I took Adderall and I swear I felt the euphoria where I thought the sky was so bright, you know, and I was like, I better not take no more of this. you know, the doctor prescribed it, but that stuff can make you feel like, you know, everything is so crystal clear, you know, so that's just a word to the wise. If it's really, really good, step away from it. I got another story. We got to take a break. Stick around. You're in the Hall of Fame. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back inside the Hall of Fame. Told you guys, got another quick story I want to tell you guys about it. When something's really, really good, it's not good. I was in the hospital. I had to have my surgery done on my elbow, and I'm in the bed, like a normal, dealing with pain. And the doctor gave me Dilaudid. You know, I had that Dilaudid drip on the little thing in the IV going in my arm. And man, when he hit me with that Dilaudid, your whole body just would get warm. It felt like the warm sensation coming over you. You're like, wow, man, no pain. All the pain just goes away. And I found myself in my bed, and I was in the PGA, and I was in a golf tournament. I don't know if it was the Masters or the U.S. Open. I don't know what it was. But I remember I had a shot, and it was a shot where the lay was, I had to hit a shot over this tree. Okay. Now, seriously, I'm in the PGA. Okay. I'm on the golf course. I take my 7-iron, I line it up, and I hit the most perfect shot over the tree, and it landed, boom, maybe 10 feet from the flag. And literally, I spin my club like Tiger Woods, like after he hit a good shot, he spins it, you know. And when I spent it, I hand it to my caddy, and I'm waiting on my caddy to take it, and the caddy didn't take it. And I look to my right, and Charmel is sitting there in a chair, and she goes, "Baby, you okay?" And I go, "Yeah." And I realized I was hallucinating, and I told the doctor, "Do not give me Dilaudid ever again."
See, that's the thing about those drugs, man.
And it was just, bro, it was pure.
I've never even heard of, what is it, Dilaudid?
Dilaudid, yeah. This dream was so real. It was so pure. You could feel it. You could touch it. Everything was so bright. Everything was so vivid. And it was a hallucination. Yeah, seriously.
Frightening. Frightening.
Oh, it was frightening. I told the doctor, I say, take it away. Don't give me no more of that. Because the doctor actually told me people would get admitted just to get that drug. That's how powerful
it is. Ooh, man. Yeah. You know, man.
I think I don't have an addictive personality.
Yeah, same. Same.
I mean, when I first started working out, I used to smoke cigarettes. I was like 20 years old. And I would go to the gym, and then I would smoke a cigarette. And then one day I said, man, one of these got to go. Either I'm going to work out or stop smoking. And I stopped smoking just like that.
Well, that's good.
Never picked up another cigarette. So I don't know what it is. I just never really had an addictive personality to where, you know, I wanted to be out of control or, you know, addicted to something.
Well, I'm glad that you didn't. This is our last segment for the people. So I want
to we got a lot to talk about, man.
We got a couple super chats to get to. So let me get to this super chat first. This is from DJ 1491. I hear Punk is still having problems with AEW, even with the new show announcement. I'm a Punk fan, but starting to think this is a mistake by Tony Khan. Yeah, there was a lot of drama yesterday. They announced the new AEW Collision show on Saturdays at the Warner Media Upfront. CM Punk was originally supposed to be a part of that. His name was pulled from the press release. Warner Media said that CM Punk has nothing to do with this property. And then Tony Khan was supposed to make a big announcement on Dynamite, and he made an announcement that he's going to make an announcement next week. And CM Punk had a lot of things to say on social media, including saying he's been propping up the dirt sheets and Brian Alvarez is a liar and heavy as the head that wears the crown, referring to himself as a king. And then the rumor is that Ace Steel was going to get brought back with the company, and this is what held up the deal. When they said, well, yeah, he can be back on payroll, but he can't be at the shows. This is just the rumor. And that is what made the deal fall through for the moment with Mr. CM Punk, a.k.a. Phil Brooks. How much of that is real? How much of that is fake? I don't know. But that is what's out there right now. And it's being reported by Mike Johnson, a PW Insider, and Sean Ross Sapp. They don't normally run with stuff that's fugazi.
Hey, bro. Hey, you get, you know, what you get with CM Punk. That's just the way it is. CM Punk doesn't play nice with others. We know that. Mm-hmm. trying to get this deal done before this Wembley show go off. I'm sure it's something which should be a priority. I could be wrong. I don't know. I really don't know what to say about it other than, I don't know, man. It's kind of, it's totally not good for business, you know, because everything right now, I mean, from the outside looking in, it seemed like everything is going smoothly. We haven't heard a whole lot about AEW since CM Punk being gone, other than, man, they seem like they got a lot of good stuff going on.
They got good stuff going on. I agree with you.
And now,
I
agree with you. And now all of a sudden we're hearing this. So I don't know if that's what you want, if that's the route you want to take. I've heard Eric Bischoff say a lot of things about CM Punk, things that I just don't like saying about people because I don't like to make things personal, mm-hmm. you know, but I tell you a lot of the stuff that Eric Bischoff says, I do agree with.
I haven't heard everything that Bischoff has said, but this is what I will say. As far as CM Punk goes, or as far as AEW goes, let me start there. Anytime we have a negative story about AEW, who is the negative story connected to? It's connected to the same person every time. Every time, you know? And as far as yesterday's events, if I am AEW, wow. This media conglomerate believes enough in our company and what we're doing as a product to give us a third television show. 2 hours. You've said it my entire time with you, Booker. Television time is worth its weight in gold. And this company's giving you 2 more hours on a Saturday night, on a weekend, to give you more opportunities to create stars. And that parade is rained on by the rumor mill generated by one individual. Now, again, even if these rumors don't prove to be accurate, why is every time there's something to celebrate with AEW, somebody rains upon it and it's always the same somebody? And I'll be honest with you. If CM Punk called himself a king yesterday, the king of what? I have no damn idea other than the king of bad headlines for the company you work for. Because every time this guy's been attached to any company, he generates bad headlines for that company. Even the UFC, because people laughed at the UFC for doing what they did with CM Punk. I am not a CM Punk hater. I've said it a million times. But if it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, well, then shucky ducky quack quack. You know what I'm saying? And yeah. And I don't know what else to say at this point other than they should have cut bait with him after he ran the top stars of the company's name through the mud, embarrassed his boss on a live platform after their biggest show of the year, and he just won the world title. And the first thing he wants to do is bring up beef from 10 years ago with his former best friend and tell everybody that his mom and him share a bank account. That's the first thing on his mind. That should tell you where this man's priorities are. They're not with the betterment of AEW. They're about one person and one person only, Phil CM Punk Brooks, and what benefits him directly. And if that's getting his buddies hired or getting himself in a prominent position, that's all this man cares about. He does not care about this company.
Hey, bro, I'm glad you said it.
Well, I believe it.
No, I mean, it's not. I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. If he cared about, you know what? I don't think CM Punk came in there to care about AEW. I think he came in there to do like what he said he was going to do, and that was to get a big bag. And, you know, have some matches and, you know, do some cool things. But as far as, you know, was CM Punk motive operandi to come in and, you know, really make AEW, you know, a great company? Did he have aspirations of coming in and creating something in AEW to make WWE look bad? Probably.
Maybe.
Did he want to make the company, you know, bigger because, you know, would be a slap in the face to WWE? Probably. But do you think he really came in to help that company or help those guys? Because the first person he worked with was Darby Allin.
Yeah. And Darby hasn't been as hot ever since.
Darby has cooled off tremendously since that match. That was really a moment to actually come in and do something, but I didn't think it was the person to do it with was Darby Allin, just because I thought Darby Allin being the guy that he is, he's not the biggest guy in the world, but he had seemed like he had created something that none of those other guys in AEW had done. That was create a connection with the fans like none other. And then CM Punk came in and beat him and literally took all of that away.
Everything. All of it.
We haven't seen nothing from that kid since. So I don't know. He had a chance to actually really, like I say, come in and be a mentor in a lot of ways. And not just a mentor, but a leader. A leader.
And you know what, though?
I said that,
you know
since,
what?
I said that since day one, though.
And you know what? He's showing it. He is leading by example. By the example of how not to conduct yourself in the professional wrestling business. That's how he's leading. He's showing everybody what not to do, in my opinion. And here's the other thing. I actually feel bad for everybody who at AEW, Tony Khan especially, for trying to do the right thing by this company always and continually getting burned by the same individual. At what point do you say enough is enough? So one guy isn't worth it, ever. Stone Cold Steve Austin was the biggest star in the history of the company, in the history of wrestling, is what people say. He left at WrestleMania 19, and guess what? They still have Monday Night Raw the next night. You know what I mean?
And continue to have Monday Night Raw.
And they have never stopped.
Hey, man. I get it, bro.
Look, let's just give a couple quick shout-outs to our last couple super chats before we wrap up. Sure. Jason Marone says, keep romping and stomping, booking Brad. Why is the tag division often looked down upon? People always jonesing for breakup, profits, academy, damage control. Real quick, what are your thoughts on the tag team division?
It's stagnant. It really is. No one really has a foothold other than the tag team champions right now. And I think that's one of the biggest problems as well, having the tag team champions having all the belts. Again, it's hard to create some more tag team blood and feel without having the tag team championships to actually do it with. So I feel like that they're going to have to do the same thing with that title that they did, you know, with Roman. They need to switch up. They need to break those titles up, and they need to do it as soon as they possibly can.
What last one? We're going to give a big shout out to our man, Cali Toenail. It's his birthday this Saturday. He's getting ready for a big BBQ. So,
and if you find the tenderoni that is right for you.
Shout out to Cali, man.
That is, dog. That is. Hey, man. Great show, man. Great show. I wish we had more time. But I got to get out of here, man. I got an event. I got to go to a little concert the kids having at school. So I got to get out of here and check my girl out, man. She's been awesome on that trombone instrument that I used to play back in the day. So, hey, man, I appreciate all you guys stepping inside the Hall of Fame today, getting your champagne wishes, caviar dreams. Bradley, as always, man, I appreciate you. But right now, guys, peace. We out of here.